This is Pearls and Swine on Good News You Can Use. I'm Levi. With me is Lisa and Travis. And today we're talking about Mark chapter 12.
Yeah, we're talking about Mark 12. And I was thinking to myself, I was wondering, have you ever been in a situation where you lied about something and you thought you had it figured out and then it all came back, like when you were a kid or like it all came out? In the wash. They found out.
I was not a liar.
Never? Never? You never postured or covered over anything?
Oh, of course I've lied before.
Okay.
But I knew I was lying. I didn't think I had it figured out.
I see.
I'm just a straight up liar.
Okay. Nice.
Yeah, there was a time in kindergarten that there was this kid in my neighborhood and we became friends and he had kind of free reign parents, and they just let him roam, watch whatever he wanted to. So I picked up some bad habits from him, and this is in kindergarten. And I won't go into those bad habits, but he had this sort of speech impediment, and he said instead of little, it was ittle. He couldn't say his L's. And so I remember one day at show and tell, I had my whatever I had, and I was like, here's my ittle guy. And afterwards, the teacher like called me in. Or didn't let me go to recess and was like, you need to be you. And I was like, what do you mean? She's like, you're trying to be too much like Jake. And I'm like, no, I'm not. And she's like, yeah, the way that you're talking is just like him. I'm like, that's just the way I talk. So I got busted.
Yeah.
It wasn't a big lie, but.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think that I can't think of, I'm not a great liar because my face usually gives me away. But and actually, when I think about the passage that we're reading for today, none of us are actually that great of liars. I think that we can get away with it for a while. But like I said at the beginning, I think it all comes out and what is true is revealed. You know, I was thinking about my kid and one of them really likes to collect rocks. And we tell him everywhere we go, you can only take two rocks. But every single time he tries to shove like nine rocks in his pocket. And so we have all these family photos of like up and down Copper Harbor with one of my children who is only supposed to have two rocks, but with 72 rocks in his pockets and his pants are nearly falling down. And you can't cover
over. They come from all like just two rocks, though.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not so sure. Well, today we're going to be reading and we're going to be discussing anyways, Mark 12. At 28 to 44 is what we're going to be looking at. But really sort of asking the question of what is it to cover over and what are the kinds of things that we cover over and what's revealed when the truth comes out. That's, I think, what we're thinking about today. Travis, would you mind reading those verses?
Yeah, all the way 28 through 44?
Yeah, that'd be great.
All right, here we go. One day the teachers of the law came and heard them debating. Noticing that Jesus had given them a good answer, he asked him, "Of all the commandments, which is the most important?" "The most important one," answered Jesus, "is this. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, and with all your soul, and with all your mind, and with all your strength. The second is this, love your neighbor as yourself. There is no commandment greater than these." "Well said, teacher," the man replied. "You are right in saying that God is one, and there is no other but him. To love him with all your heart, with all your understanding, and with all your strength, and to love your neighbor as yourself is more important than all the burnt offerings and sacrifices." When Jesus saw that he had answered wisely, he said to him, "You are not far from the kingdom of God." And from then on, no one dared ask him any more questions.
Okay, you can stop there. Sorry, I'm pulling out like teacher mode now.
That's all right.
All right. So just to give a little bit of context, we get to this moment where Jesus is answering the question of what's the greatest commandment after a series of questions being asked of him by a bunch of people who challenge him, and they're not honest skeptics. So last week we talked about the Jesus comes in on his donkey and it's a triumphal entry. Everybody's celebrating him as king. And then he finds himself in the temple, madder than a hornet at what they're doing there. He drives out all the temple changers. And then after that, we have a series of questions that are asked of Jesus and not in good faith. And so we arrive at this question that leads us in, I guess, to the end of chapter 12. This is on the heels of four other skeptical questions that are not meant to get at truth, but really meant to trap Jesus. And Jesus will not be trapped. And so he asks this question. And I think it's really funny that the guy who's asking Jesus what the great commandment is, Jesus answers. And then the guy's like, yeah, good job, Jesus. And I think that's really funny, right? He's like, oh, yeah, I'll give you some props, Jesus. Good job. But then Jesus actually turns the conversation, and he actually is the one who then leads us to a better understanding of the kinds of questions we should ask in the first place. But maybe before we go on, Travis, did you see anything there that stood out to you?
Well, one, I think when we see just what you said, like it's these kind of trapping efforts that they're making and asking him these questions. And he had talked a little bit back in, I think, chapter 10, when he talked about the parable. No, that's still in 12. The parable of the evil farmers. And he was totally calling the Pharisees and the teachers of the law out and that. So they're trying to trap him. He's kind of firing back a little bit after he's cleared the temple, obviously angry, rightly so. And they continue on. So I would say Jesus is probably frustrated at this point.
Well, yeah, and each of these people that ask some questions, disingenuous questions, not generous questions, they think they've got it figured out. The scribes, the Pharisees, the people in the temple who are selling things, asking Jesus as if he doesn't know. Yeah, I think Jesus is frustrated up to this point for sure.
Well, and the teachers of the law have all the Mosaic stuff that they're living by, like all these rules, these regulations, these sacrifices and all that stuff. And Jesus really boils it down here, like love God and love the people around you with the love of God. And I think in our circles, even like we tend to make it way too complicated. It's like love Jesus, let him be the ruler of your life and function out of that. And we can get into all the weeds of everything, which is fun and interesting to study sometimes, but it's made for everybody. The gospel is made for everybody. And that's what I think the beauty of seeing Jesus respond this way is, like, he simplified it.
Yeah, he doesn't just simplify it. He actually leads this person and everybody who's around to a better understanding of what it actually means to love God. He kind of throws it back in their court and he's like, look, yeah, the greatest commandment is love the Lord your God with all your heart and soul and mind. But do you understand what it means to love God and who God actually is? And so then we get to this section of the chapter where Jesus asks a question. And do you want to read that, Travis?
Yep. Picking up in verse 35.
Yeah.
When Jesus was still teaching in the temple courts, he asked, why do the teachers of the law say that the Messiah is the son of David? David himself, speaking by the Holy Spirit, declared, the Lord said to my Lord, sit at my right hand until I put your enemies under my feet. David himself calls him Lord. How then can he be his son? And the large crowd listened to him with delight. Keep on going.
No, that's good. Yeah, what do you see there? Like, it's such a strange question. He like takes him back to the Psalms and he's like, what about David? Did you have anything you want to say to that, Pastor Levi?
Yeah, I think that there's some things that are interesting. It's just a very weird. He's actually showing his identity in this thing. But it's not like where I would go if I were Jesus. like, it's just like, why are you going to the psalmist? Like, but it's a very interesting question because he's talking about his humanity, the lineage. Like, I'm in the line of David, but how can I also be Lord? Well, then he's talking about his divinity. He's revealing that he's God-man, God in the bod, in the midst of this, which I think is a really interesting way of how he gets about this. Like, because they're asking, how are you doing this? Under whose authority are you doing this? And that's how he gets there, is to say, hey, I'm both in the lineage. I'm the son of David, and I am also the Lord of David.
And he's not afraid of the scandal of his birth either. Like, that's so, that's a curious part to me here, too. Jesus is like, I'm here. I am the son of David. I don't care what you're saying about my mama. You should know who I am. And I am God and I am man and I am king. And he does it in such a strange way. Really strange. I don't. I mean, I guess in the previous section of chapter 12, he says, I'm the God of Abraham. And of Isaac and of Jacob, or maybe he's just reminding them of what God had spoken to Moses. But either way, when he cleanses the temple, he says, this is my father's house. And he says he's God. That seems a little bit more powerful than come to this obscure psalm with me.
Yeah, but they are calling him son of David. And so, you know, when he comes in the triumphal entry,
yeah.
And so he's connecting them back to their own words. He's like a good lawyer, and he just traps them in the whole thing.
Oh, that's so good.
Yeah.
Yeah, because the blind man is saying, son of David, have mercy on me. And so he's going to finish that conversation. That's really lovely. Travis, did you see anything there that you wanted to add?
Yeah, nothing that's been pointed out. Like, he just goes back to answer their question. It's all, again, I just feel like this passage is like Jesus kind of ticked off and just being giving him zingers back at him. Like, you guys, you keep trying to trap me. You keep trying to pull these moves over me. You ain't going to get me.
What do you make of the fact that the crowd is hearing him gladly?
Yeah, they delight in it.
Yeah, what are they delighting in?
I think they're enjoying some of like the his teaching on this thing as they're trying to figure some of this stuff out. But like he talks about this idea of sitting. And I was thinking about that idea. Like what does that actually mean? And you know, why does he sit at my right hand? Well, when do you sit? Like you come home from work and you're like, "Okay, like I've done a good day's work. I'm going to take a little break. I'm going to watch, what's your show? I don't know. Mine's
Great
little...
British Baking Show. I do like that.
I don't like the British accent thing. But he's explaining something in there. He's explaining in that passage that he's really the Lamb of God. He's the sacrifice. He's the one that's coming into this thing. And that same thing is picked up in Hebrews 10, and that same idea of sitting at the right hand, left hand after the sacrifice thing, it says day after day, every priest stands and performs his religious duties again and again. He offers the same sacrifice, which can never take away the sins. But when this priest, being Jesus, had offered for all time one sacrifice for sin, he sat down at the right hand of God. He's talking about the finished work that he's about to go do. He's talking about, he's showing his identity that he is going to be the one who sits at the right hand of God because there's a finished work. He can sit down because he doesn't have to do any more work. The sacrifice has been done, which I think is really cool.
I pictured it in my mind a little bit differently. I was thinking it's like a rap battle. You know, the Pharisees and the teachers of the law keep coming with these, but Jesus, what you got? And Jesus is like, this is what I got. And he's just like, boom. And the crowd is getting kind of a kick out of it.
So then he sits down.
Yeah. He's like,
my job. A little different for sure. So after Jesus proclaims his divinity and his humanity and tells them who he is in this sort of lip sync rap battle, whatever. He then turns again on, and he warns people against, and this is where, let's just go ahead and read it, 38 to 44.
All right. So as he taught, Jesus said, "Watch out for the teachers of the law. They like to walk around in flowing robes and be greeted with respect in the marketplaces and have the most important seats in the synagogues and the places of high honor at banquets. They devour widows' houses and for a show make lengthy prayers. These men will be punished most severely." And Jesus sat down opposite the place where the offerings were put and watched the crowd putting their money into the temple treasury. Many people threw in large amounts, but a poor widow came and put in two very small copper coins worth only a few cents. Calling his disciples to him, Jesus said, "Truly I tell you, this poor widow has put more into the treasury than all the others. They all gave out of their wealth, but she, out of her poverty, put in everything, all she had to live on."
So I just think this is, as it ends the chapter anyways, and what we began our conversation with, the question was, what's the greatest commandment? Love God with all your heart, soul, and mind. And then the chapter ends with this really beautiful demonstration of what that might look like, giving her whole life. But in between, we have this really harsh warning against the scribes and Pharisees. And what do you make of that?
I think it's funny that he's literally in the temple. And so those people are like not far from them. So they're like, you know, standing probably somewhere, you know, around, and he's calling them out. You know, the thing, it would be like if we were in church and I was on stage and I was like, "Hey, look at those people with the Green Bay Packers shirt. Beware of them. They don't understand that we're from Michigan.
Connected to Wisconsin.
That we took from them." And they're unfairly. Like, "Oh, we're closer. You know, we're closer, and that's why we root for the Packers." But then the next day, you see them rooting for the Tigers, who are 18 and 13, no big deal. And so, like, they're not rooting for the Brewers. They're rooting for the Tigers. And that is in Detroit. I don't know if people understand, like, geography in here, but we're from Michigan. So it'd be, like, me saying that to them in this. And he basically just calls these guys out. And he's going, hey, like, these guys are not, they're not doing what you think. They look like good guys, but, you know, they're really just looking, they have the look, you know, they got the flowing robe, they're trying to gain honor, and they want good seats at the synagogue, right? Like, their goal is to be honored guest in the midst of this thing. And what they're doing in the prayer is like, look it, I'm a good guy. And he's like, hey, let me warn you about these guys. These guys are not what you think they are.
Yeah, but why is he warning them immediately after reminding them who he is? This is what I wonder.
I think because those are the guys that are going to come up against him, right? Like, he just said, hey, I am this person. And they're going to say something different to you. You better understand that these guys are, you know, they're confused about where they live and who's in front of them.
Well, and he knows they're not backing down because they haven't. And I just got to point out the Brewers' record is 19-11. So, you know,
you're from Wisconsin. Talking about locals, dude. Calm down.
All right. But I think what
you're
I think
a
about the
that's
right. Youch. I think the way that passage progresses too, like, you're going from him telling love the Lord your God, and these guys are showing it from the outside, like. They're following the rules. They think they look good. They think they're doing what God wants them to do. And then he talks about this widow that gives everything that she has. And it's not showy. It's not flashy. She's got no reason to be boastful about it. When really, actually, she does. But she's not giving out of her wealth like everybody else. And that's what I feel like the Pharisees are. You know, they've got their presence, their appearance, and they're showing how good they are, but on the outside.
Well, it says they devour widows. It's they claw themselves to the top of the food chain. They don't care about other people. They just care about themselves and the honor and the prestige and the fame and all of those other things. And he's saying, hey, you be weary of these people because they pray real, real good and they look real, real, real good. But you need to understand that there's something else going on there.
But yeah, the contrast between the scribes and the... and the widow is stark. I mean, in terms of his language, right? He says that the scribes and Pharisees who are walking around with these robes and all this stuff, they will receive greater condemnation. Greater than what?
I think they're going to be judged is what it means. Like, they're going to be judged more harshly in the midst of this because they have the access. They've had the pedigree. They've gone to rabbinical school at some level. They've made it and they've been following, and so they have all of this, all of the information to actually be people who love God and love others, mm-hmm. and yet they choose to devour widows, to climb to the top, to get the prestige, to get the honor and the claps from men.
Yeah, which is so different than the contrast of, like, first of all, the widow lives out of her poverty, which means she gives out of what she have that has that is nothing. And then what the nothing that she has is her whole life.
Well, I think the other thing, the picture there is Jesus is looking at, he's like sitting there like, okay, what's everyone giving? Like, people don't like pastors talking about money. How would you like it if Jesus was there like, what you got going on there? And it says some give large sums of money. Yeah. And she gives two little bits, two little coins, and barely anything, which I think is interesting.
Well, her barely anything is everything.
Right, which the Greek word there, which I think is fascinating, what he uses there is it's bios, and which we get biology from, which we get the idea that she gave her whole life, which I think is incredibly fascinating.
Well, which is what it
ties
takes
right back into that love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. That's your whole self, your whole life. Yeah. Follow him, commit it to him, give it to him.
Yeah. Yeah.
He'll do immeasurably more than what you can do with it.
Yeah, it takes your whole life. It doesn't take posturing about a life you do not have. It takes your whole life to do the thing that is the great commandment.
Yeah, I think it's, yeah, it's an interesting thing of how they contrast that. And he brings it to this place of this widow, and he's there with the disciples. And I think you could walk away if you just read this and into this place of, well, rich people are bad, poor people are good. Well, the Bible doesn't talk about that. The Bible only describes it really as people who are righteous and wicked, people who love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your soul, and all your mind, and love your neighbor as yourself, and people who do not. And I think that's the delineation. It's not about the wealth or the money, but she gave all of herself. She died to self to gain life in the midst of that.
Yeah, and it's no small task. I think the interesting thing to me, too, is that the people who are not giving their whole life but pretending that they are actually doing a lot of work to cover up that they're not doing the thing that they should be doing, or they're to posture. They're doing a lot of work to do that. And she just gives what she has. And in some ways, it's easier. And in some ways, the cost is actually greater. And I think that's interesting.
It's she gives everything she has, but she also trusts in the one who has it all.
Yeah.
And I think that's the difference. They don't trust in the one who has it all. And I think that there's actually, she finds life in that. So I actually, in some ways, while she has incredible amount of faith that God is going to care for her, he's going to take care of her in the midst of this, even though she gives, you know, these two bits, that's all she has, that God is still going to care for her in her time of need. And she gives it all. I think it's a pretty incredible story of faith also in there. Well, that is good news you can use.
Hey, thanks for joining us this week. If you've got questions or topic ideas you'd like us to cover, we'd love to hear from you. You can email those to travis@evangelup.org. If you want to catch up on any of the previous episodes aired here on Good News You Can Use of Pearls and Swine, just search Evangel Houghton on your preferred podcast platform, or you can find those at our website, evangelup.org.